Welcome to Mission Promise, Navigating Special Education for Military Families. I'm your host, Mary, and a fellow military spouse. I'm so excited to be here with you, sharing stories, insights, and resources that can help military families like ours navigate the world of special education. So let's dive in.
Welcome back to another episode of Mission Promise. Today, we have a special guest, Destiny Huff. She's a neuroaffirming IEP coach, an advocate, and educational consultant. So welcome, Destiny. Thank you for taking the time out to come and talk with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, and if you want to go ahead and give a little bit more about yourself before we get into today's topic, that's fine.
Yeah, so I'm Destiny Huff. I'm the social media manager for Partners in Promise, but I'm also a licensed mental health professional, so I own a private practice. I'm a certified trauma therapist for children. And I own Destiny Huff Consulting, which is where I do advocacy for parents at the IEP table that have neurodivergent learners, so autistic, ADHD, OCD, dyslexia. And then I also do trainings and professional development for schools on neuroaffirming practice.
Nice. So today we want to discuss the Bill of Rights, like what it is, the importance of it, and just knowing the basics for our listeners. So let's dive right in. So I first would like to know, can you actually explain what the Bill of Rights is and how that process works to protect the rights of students with special needs?
Yes. So Partners in Promise is one of the only organizations that does research on military children in special education, their families, and how to support them. And so Partners in Promise came up with this Military Family Special Education Bill of Rights that covers just these different rights that all families that are in special education and dealing with military know to successfully advocate for their children.
Us putting out this Bill of Rights, how can it impact the educational experience for students?
I think it can impact them by, first of all, letting the parents know what their rights are at the IEP table. I think a lot of parents struggle with their role and not recognizing that. When you look at IDEA, so the Individual with Disabilities Education Act, it literally says parent, guardian, caregiver of the child who is enrolled in special education is a required member of the IEP. And I think a lot of times because the parent is not the quote unquote professional, forget. And right. So when we talk about like the Bill of Rights, for example, we have participating in your children's IEP meeting. You can ask an EFMP member to participate at your duty station. So that's that family support piece of EFMP. It talks about reviewing the IEP goals and progress with the IEP team and how, you know, they are supposed to provide us with a prior written notice. A lot of parents don't even know what a prior written notice is. They don't know that the school is required to provide this anytime they accept or reject any changes to the IEP. So for example, if a parent's like, I would like to request a functional behavior assessment for my child in the school, we don't think they need one, so we're not going to do one. Mm-hmm. They have to actually provide you with a prior written notice, or for shorthand, PWN, stating that. So the purpose of this is to really help them understand their rights and to allow the children to have access to this free and appropriate public education, which is FAPE, that they are legally entitled to. So this is not a request. This is something they're legally entitled to, being children with disabilities in special education so that they can interact and engage with their non-disabled.
Nice. What would you say are some common challenges or issues that arise when it comes to implementing, like when the parents can implement these Bill of Rights that we created?
So when we do talk about the Bill of Rights too, this is something, again, that Partners in Promise came up with. This is not a legal document because when I posted about it before, I've seen where somebody's like, is this a legal document? Where can I find this? This is not a legal document. This is something that we feel, having done research on special education for military children, that they should be entitled to. So I think some common issues that can arise are just very common, even when your child is not affiliated with the military and in special education, that I've seen in general. So being military children and families, like, because I'm a military spouse as well, we move a lot. Mm-hmm. And so when we move, a lot of times when we come in, there's this perception of they're the professional and we're just the parent and we don't have an understanding of the process. And so the Bill of Rights really gives them that understanding of you have the right to participate. You have the right to request a meeting. You have the right to request that your meeting be recorded. You know, you have all these rights. You have a right to receive the evaluation in advance. You have a right to receive an IEP draft. So we state all these things. So I think some of the common challenges that the parents can run into is the school kind of just being like, we don't have to do this, or we don't want to do this, or we don't need to do this. So a way to get around that and address that is to really look at what does their state law say? Because we know that some children are not going to be in their day of schools, right? They're going to be in county schools or parish schools if they're in Louisiana. And so the district is going to go by, or should at least go by, what their state law says. So when you're looking at how they're addressing things, really go back to what is the special education handbook for your state that you're in say. Like, for example, in one of the states I advocate for families, it says that they're only required to provide an IEP draft 48 hours in advance of the IEP.
48 hours.
So we know doesn't give a whole lot of time for you to really review it and give valuable input. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I remind parents, you don't have to sign anything at the IEP. So if you get the draft 48 hours in advance and you have just enough time to review it, show up to this meeting and talk to the team, you can be like, okay, now I'm going to wait for those changes that I received and my input being in there, and then review it again. Mm-hmm. And then I'll sign it if I feel like it's reflective of what we discussed. So that's the biggest challenge that I see, is that how IDEA puts it is that the states cannot make any laws that are below the IDEA standard. Okay. And so they can't, when they have that 60-day federal timeline to initiate the evaluation, for example, they can't say we're going to do 90 days, but they can say we're going to do 60 school days. Mm-hmm. And so once they do that, then that means only when they're in school, and then they can specify holiday break periods apply. So you could be looking at 90 days. So they can't do anything less than, but they are allowed to make their own standards. So I think those are the only like challenges or issues I really see arising. It's holding them to the standard of what you are really allowed to request as a parent and as a member of the IEP team. But I see that across the board anytime a child is in special.
Okay. How can educators and parents work together to advocate for and protect the rights of these kids, their children?
The best way to work together is really that communication piece. It's really learning about the child and their specific needs. I'm always recommending to really learn about the disability. So for example, in the month of March, we had our founder and CEO, Michelle, and she wrote an article on cerebral palsy. And that's a disability that I am not familiar with, but her daughter has cerebral palsy. And so she went into the weeds of like how she's advocated for her in that role. For me, my children have autism. One of them is autistic. One of them has a speech delay. So I really had to go into the weeds of how do I advocate for them in that capacity. Right. And so anytime you're going to advocate for your child, or anytime educators are wanting to advocate for children or advocates are, really learn the disability in general, and then really learn the intricacies of that disability for that child and how it specifically impacts them. Because I say all disabilities are a spectrum. And while you see the standard, this is what this looks like, we know that may not always be the case. And then really learning about the federal law in general. So what does IDEA say? What does free and appropriate public education mean? There are many denials of FAPE that schools do every day. And a lot of times they don't even know it because of the training that they're receiving from a peer also doesn't know. And this is what our district has always done. That doesn't mean it's legal. And right. That doesn't mean it'll hold up in court. Then learning the state law. I think that's the most difficult part for our military families because, like I said, my child, for example, started out in special education in the state of Louisiana. Now he's in special education in the state of Georgia, but he's in a Dodea school. Next year, he'll be in special education in the state of Georgia in a public school. So you see how in his short special education career, because my kids are still pretty young, I am having to learn like three different systems to really successfully advocate.
And I don't think that's talked about enough, just that whole having to, when we transition, and then the fact you're going to a public school versus a Dodea school, and just the difference in that alone, it's not talked about enough. A lot of parents are not aware of it because you just think, okay, it's going to be easy as we transition. Mm-hmm. And it's not.
Yes, 100%. And I think that's where we get really caught up is, sometimes too, like in the being in the military community, we have a lot of spouses who do not work. Mm-hmm. And so what they will do is they will receive, we're seeing a rise in, for example, diagnosis for children in the military with autism. And so what you'll see is they'll just say, oh, I'm just going to homeschool. And I know for me, as somebody who I worked before my children were born, I worked after they were born. We have always been a person income household. So for me, that was never really a feasible option. And right. So then a lot of military parents get caught up with, do I sacrifice job and working to provide my child the support because of navigating the special education system? And so, especially when I am a part of all of these groups, you know, online for support that are just saying, oh, I just homeschool. So I think that it's important for families to know that you do have organizations like Partners in Promise out there advocating for ways to support your child in special education. It was founded by spouses that all had a child in special education. Mm-hmm. So we're not just coming from a standpoint of, oh, we see these issues or concerns, we live them. And so our whole current team all has involvement with special education in some way, role or capacity, whether it's 504 plan or IEPs. So I think that's where you have to go to is looking at those resources and those supports. And so the Bill of Rights really gets into these are things that you are legally entitled to. It's just knowing the law and knowing that you're legally entitled to them. And then going back to those templates, which our website has, of templates to request things, going back to that binder, we have a whole binder that you can customize for your child that's in special education. I really think that a lot of times for parents, it's just us not knowing the support that is available. And when you add that layer of not just child, but special education and military, we really start to get flustered.
I agree. I mean, before we close out, I did want to talk about, I forgot to mention the due process. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. So due process is something that is really initiated when the IEP, members of the IEP team can't agree. Let me put it that way. Mm-hmm. I say that because a lot of times we'll say when the IEP team and the parent don't agree. And we have to remember parents are part of the IEP team. So when we're talking about due process, we're referring to the fact that, let's say, a common one that comes up is placement. Let's say that the school has decided that the child needs to be in a special education classroom for a majority of the day. And the parent believes they should be in a general education classroom majority of the day. Now we're in a disagreement about placement. And so sometimes they can work it out and navigate that. And sometimes the school is, no, we're standing our ground. This is what we're going to agree to. You either agree to it or we go to due process. As far as due process is concerned, one of the first steps is mediation. They want to have the parent and the school sit down together as an IEP team with a third party neutral member who is a mediator and discuss how we can successfully navigate this and work out whatever the disagreement is regarding the IEP. When that doesn't work, or if that doesn't work, then you go into due process where the school has an attorney and the parent can have an attorney or represent themselves. Though we recommend if you go into due process, you get an attorney, because the school has a certain amount of time to respond to the request from the parent. So the parent does have to put their request in writing for IDEA saying that there's a disagreement and they're going to go to due process. The school has so many days to respond to that, and usually that's going to be their attorney responding. And then it becomes a conversation between attorneys of what can we work out and what can we agree. When we talk about due process, you want to make sure you have all of your ducks in a row. So when you go back to Partners in Promises Bill of Rights, we talk about how you can audio record a meeting. So that way it is not debatable. It's not subjective. What every member of the IEP team member has said is in the recording. And you can record any IEP meeting in any state. It just has to be a communication between the parties. So for example, with DODEA, they'll say, before we start, we need to ask, is anyone recording this meeting? Because if the parent is recording the meeting in DODEA, the team needs to record and have their own recording as well. In other states, they will request and just say, just so we're clear, does the parent want to record this meeting or do they not want to record it? So for example, in Texas, parent will say, yes, I want this recording. They record the meeting. The parent receives a copy of the meeting as well. So you want to find out what your state law says about that. The next piece is when you're looking at any type of due process, having that prior written notice. So anytime they make any changes, or if they refuse to do something or they agree to do something, that should be in the prior written notice. And that, again, is your documentation and proof for what they're saying. So that would stay, in this case, like the example I gave about placement, it would say, parent requested this, school requested this, school disagreed with the request, stated we would do this instead, and this is why we're not going to do that. Parents stated that they would follow up, and then that's where you continue to see the evolution of it. So that gives that detail on that. So the same with providing a copy, so then providing a copy of the draft and noting in the notes of the IEP, like the parent has disagreed with this or disagreed with that. And then we also have in our Bill of Rights about you being able to request a copy of your child's education records per the Family Education Rights and Privacy Act. So again, go back to the state and see how they are required to give those records and what the parent is required to pay for. Because some states have made it to where some parents are able to come in and review them, or some parents are able to come in and make a copy themselves. But if they are required to make a copy, there is a fee. So always check that, mm-hmm. because we know the older your children get, the thicker that educational file can get. And that sometimes is how they use that to deter the parent from getting the file, because I don't want to pay you $150 to, like, because right. they have to go in and say, it's going to cost us this much per page. Your child has this many pages, and this is the total that we're going to charge you. It's usually not just a set. And then we also talk about free and appropriate public education, which has to do with denials of FAPE, which is what can also lead to due process. And so that's looking at making sure that they're following the prongs that are looked at in a legal situation. And I'm not an attorney or a lawyer, but when they're looking at substantive violations or procedural violations, and basically, did they follow all of IDEA's processes for doing the IEP? So did they assess appropriately? Did they do child find appropriately, which is identifying the child with a disability and evaluating them? Did they evaluate for all the disabilities and diagnoses that were suspected? And then we created this IEP, they implement everything in the IEP with fidelity. Did they involve the parent in the process to make the IEPs? There's a lot of ways in which due process can occur. And so it's just important for the parents to really understand their rights in the process. And, you know, what everything looks like before stepping into due process, you know, making sure you're checking those boxes and you have that documentation, because once you get to due process, it does benefit you.
Thank you for that. Is there any other advice you would like to leave our listeners?
Just do your research. Being a military family, it can be very overwhelming. We know a lot of times the spouse tends to carry the education burden, so to speak. So they're the one that's responsible for enrolling. They're the one responsible for reviewing the IEP. They're the one responsible for having the most recent IEP. So do your research about the states that you're PCSing to, the schools available to your child if you're going to reside on base, if they're no-day schools. And remember, not all on-base schools are no-day schools. Mm-hmm. So make sure, is it a no-day school or a county school? And then what does that entail? Always carry your child's most recent IEP with you and make sure that IEP is outlined with everything that the school was doing, so that the next school doesn't have any questions. Like, they should be able to pick up that IEP and get started. And, you know, the last piece is just, you know, advocate for your babies like nobody else, because you're the one consistent figure every time they move. And so you're the one that's going to know, hey, these behaviors are popping up now that they haven't had since first grade, and something has changed, and now I need to support them.
Destiny, thank you so much for taking the time out to speak with me today. Really appreciate it. And I'm sure our listeners gained a lot of information that they can take and use at their next IEP meeting.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining Mission Promise on this special education journey. We hope that our discussions, stories, and resources will provide valuable insights and support for you and your family. Remember, you're not alone in this. Stay connected with our community, share your experiences, and continue to advocate for your child's education. Together, we can make a difference. Until next time, take care and keep navigating with strength and resilience. This episode was sponsored by the USAA Foundation, whose mission is helping military families extend beyond the financial services and products they deliver and into the communities we call home. Thank you to the USAA Foundation.